So first, a very big thank you to Lynn for hosting, and I very much appreciated, you know, finding a role in a new community doing different classes. We had a class that, let's just say, it didn't exactly work out in terms of the quantity of people coming, but we had a high level of quality, and Lynn was very persistent. I just want to thank Rabbi Zaitchik for inviting me here to speak and for sharing words of Torah. I think you all know that Rabbi Zaitchik is persistent. And if he wants you to speak, you're going to speak. I also wanted to give a quick thank you to some of the scholars, rabbinic scholars, who I took a look at some of what they did on this topic, and they very much influenced my thought. And that's a Rabbi Torchiner from Toronto, Rabbi Leibowitz from the Five Towns, Rabbi Feldman from Teaneck, and Rabbi Fuhrer, who wrote a very nice book for Art Scroll. An IRS agent called up a rabbi one morning, and he said, "Rabbi, I have a number of questions to ask you, if that's okay." You know, you get a little nervous when the IRS calls. The rabbi says, "Of course." So the IRS agent says, "Is Herbert Goldstein a member in your congregation?" The rabbi said, "He is." "And does he come to synagogue on a regular basis?" "He does." "And did he make a $50,000 donation to your synagogue?" "He will." The topic of charity, of tzedakah, it's a phenomenal topic. It's a special topic. It's a topic that I believe, while it's not unique to the Jewish people, a lot of the world and a lot of the world's charitable acts were learnt from the Jewish value of charity, of giving tzedakah. You could have a bookshelf in your home and fill it with literature that has been written, Judaic, Hebrew literature, halachic literature that has been written about tzedakah. And you would think, you just walk down the street, ask someone, you know, what would there be any laws that have to do with charity? Are there any? So you would think charity is just a good thing to open up your wallet and give some money. But we all know Judaism. Judaism has a lot to say about everything. And charity, tzedakah, is no. It falls into that category. The Talmud makes a unique statement about tzedakah that is not made about any other mitzvah, any other of the 613 commandments. I draw our attention to source number one on the sheet, and you can feel free to ask questions. This is, I want to make sure that everything is clear. We have Hebrew sources, we have the translation, whatever you're comfortable with. So the Gemara is a Gemara in Bava Basra, and Daf Tes Amid Beis 9b. Mishmei de Rabbi Elazar, this is a teaching in the name of Rabbi Elazar. Mai dechsev, why does the Pasuk say, Vayilbash tzedaka kishir yom? That Vayilbash, and he wore tzedakah, righteousness, like a coat of mail, armor, that is made out of different chains. Chain armor, like in the good old days. Why would charity be worn that way? Lo mar lacha, the Talmud tells us, Ma shir yon ze kol klipa v'klipa mitztaref l'shir yon gadol. Each and every link in the armor, each one that you add, it goes ahead and creates this huge coat of armor that's able to protect someone. Af tzedakah, so too it is with charity. Kol pruta upruta mitztarefes l'cheshbon gadol. Every time you drop a penny into the tzedakah box, every time you give a dollar, every time you write a check, it gets added together into this huge collection of charity, this huge collection of mitzvah. Rabbi Chanina Amar, a different one of the Talmudic scholars, explained it from a different pasuk, Mehacha, another source. Ukik beged idim kol tzikotenu. The same lesson he teaches, all our righteousness is like a type of garment. Ma beged ze. Look at a garment. When you look at a garment closely, what do you have? Thread after thread after individual thread goes ahead and creates a beautiful garment we're all wearing. So he teaches the same thing. Kol nima v'nima mitzarefas lebeged gadol. Every thread makes a beautiful piece of clothing. Af tzedakah, so too when it comes to charity. Kol prutu prutu mitzarefas lechashbon gadol. Every time you give charity, it creates something large. The Talmud does not make this statement about any other mitzvah. Think about a mitzvah. You light Shabbos candles on a Friday afternoon. A beautiful mitzvah. You know what happens when you light Shabbos candles on one afternoon, one Friday afternoon, and 7 days later you light Shabbos candles on another afternoon? You did two mitzvos of honoring Shabbos. Beautiful. But it's two separate mitzvos. Comes the Talmud and tells us when it, by tzedakah, by charity, every time you give charity, it goes ahead and it equals one huge accounting of charitable acts. Why is that? So first and foremost, it shows how, it's one example to see how charity is unique. Right? When you, if the Talmud is making this declaration about one specific mitzvah, we're seeing that charity is already going to be separate. The Maharal, one of the early commentators in the 1600s in the city of Prague, he raises this point. He does not give an explanation, but he cites this Gemara and explains how there is no other commandment, there is no other mitzvah that has this about it. And later scholars have maybe thought about it, that every single mitzvah, and this is explained by some, that there are 365 negative commandments, there are 248 positive commandments. It corresponds to, the 248 positive commandments correspond to different limbs in the body. We have 248 limbs in our body. The fact that tzedakah is treated as different, it's almost as if saying that tzedakah corresponds to the wholeness of a person's body, to a wholeness of a person's being. Because the, and we're going to see, you can even maybe even see it now. Take a look on the bottom of the page. We'll go drop out of order. It's always good to spice things up a little bit. The Pasuk tells us in Tehillim, Tov l'Hashem l'kol, God is good to all, v'rachamav al kol ma'asav, and God's mercy, His mercy, goes to all of His handiwork, all of His creations. We are charged with acting like God. You want to know one of the greatest ways, or maybe the greatest way to act like God? It's giving. Because that's what God did when He created this world. He's the ultimate giver, capital G. He's gomel chasadim tovim. He pays kindness. He gives. He gave us life. He gave us this world. And so when we give charity, we're mimicking God. And that's perhaps the reason why the Talmud describes the giving of tzedakah in such a different and unique way. Tzedakah, even though we're talking about it as a grand idea and a value that perhaps we help to teach the world, it's a mitzvah like any other mitzvah. And in order for it to be considered a biblical mitzvah, it has to have a source in the Bible, in the five books of the Torah. And if you take a look at source number two on your sheet, it's a number of psukim, a number of verses that come from Sefer Devarim in Parshat Re'eh, where the Torah basically tells a story, in a sense, but tells a short story in a command type of way. Ki Pasuk Zion, the first of the verses. Ki yev b'cha evyon, when or if there will be among you someone who is destitute. Me'achar achecha, from amongst your brethren. V'achad sha'arecha, in one of your gates. Ba'artzecha, in your land, Hasher Hashem Elokecha nosin lecha, in the land that your Hashem, your God, will give to you. Lo sis ametz es levavcha. You shouldn't harden your heart. Velo sikpots es yadcha. You shouldn't close your hand, me'achicha evyon, from your brother who's destitute. Rather, what should you do? And the imagery is right there. You could imagine. The Torah is telling us, look at a closed hand. Don't do that. Next verse says, ki fasoch tiftach es yadcha. Open up your hand. Lo. Open up your hand to the poor individual. Va'avet tabitenu. Right, you're going to open up your hand, you're going to lend him if he needs lending, de machzoro, whatever he is missing, you're going to offer, asher yechzer lo, that he's missing, you're going to go ahead and give. And here, just on this one phrase, we're going to circle back to this, but what's with the imagery of the hand? So one of the main goals of our topic, and again, we might not walk out with knowing everything on the matter, as I said, there's a lot to talk about, but one of the things we need to talk about is, how do we go ahead? We want to be good Jews. We want to give charity. But there's so many charitable organizations coming at us. We open them, right? My wife's grandfather, he travels, and he doesn't like to cancel the mail. Instead, he has one of his sons come and organize his mail. You end up with a whole, you go away for 2 weeks, you have a whole pile of organizations, and wonderful organizations. How do we go ahead and try to have a Torah perspective, how to prioritize, right? We wish we could win the lottery and give every organization everything, but how do we prioritize the charity that we want to be giving? So the Vilna Gaon, Rabbi Eliyahu Kramer, who was a great sage in the 1700s, he said, look at the Pasuk. The Pasuk says you shouldn't keep your hand closed. Rather, you should open your hand. When your hand is closed, look right now. Take your hand, make a fist, look down at it. Every single finger looks equal to the other fingers. You can't tell that there's a difference in the size of the finger. But when you open up your hand in charity, you see that your fingers are different sizes. You recognize that when it comes to charity, there are different needs. There are different situations that one is going to require more charity, one's going to require less charity. So that's an idea that we're going to hopefully circle back to. It's a basic question perhaps that we could ask ourselves, is what is the goal in giving charity? In addition to the fact that the Torah just told us to do it. Fine, we all want to be good Jews, the Torah tells us to give charity. But let's probe a little further. Why should we be giving charity? What's the goal in giving charity? I'll take a suggestion from the crowd.
I feel like it benefits the person, the recipient, and it also benefits the giver, both ways.
So there are the two main ideas that we want to focus on to begin with, is that there's a goal in providing for the one who's receiving the gift. There's a poor individual who's lacking food. By you giving that individual money, or by you giving that individual food, you've now filled a need, you've filled a void, and you've provided for them. That the goal of charity is to make sure that the ones who need the charity receive the charity. The ones who need clothing, receive clothing. However, as was mentioned, there's also a thought, and we're going to probe this, that the act of giving charity is beneficial for you, the giver. When we develop our character, we need to figure out ways to go ahead and accomplish that. If you turn your sheet over to page 2, the Sefer Achinuch, Reb Aaron Halevi, we're not exactly sure who he was, but when he wrote the Sefer Achinuch, he wrote a book talking about the 613 mitzvos. It's presumed, and it appears that he wrote the book almost like as an introduction to the observance of mitzvos for a young child who was becoming 13, who was becoming 12, who was becoming the age of keeping mitzvos, and goes according to the order of the Torah, explaining aspects of the mitzvah, what's the root of a mitzvah, the reason why we have a mitzvah. And here, the Sefer Achinuch, Reb Aaron Halevi, in source number 4, he's talking about the mitzvah of Peah. Peah is a mitzvah, the Torah says, it's a type of charitable mitzvah. If you are a farmer, most of us aren't farmers anymore in this land, but we used to all, it was a very Jewish trait to be a farmer. In the land of Israel, most people were farmers. You were charged to leave a corner of your field that the poor could come and take from. There we go, Megillat Rut, exactly. We just saw it. It happened. It was real. It's in the book. So he explains as follows. Take a look at source number 4. HaKadosh Baruch Hu ratza liyos amo asher bachar miturim b'chol mida tova v'yikara. God, he wanted that his nation, meaning us, the Jewish people, should be crowned with every good type of character trait. V'she'el lohem nefesh baracha v'ruach nediva. The Jewish people should possess a spirit of blessing, a spirit of generosity, of wanting to give. He was writing way before any type of psychological research about how your behavior, that your actions will go ahead and affect your thoughts. And he basically has this theory that he says throughout his book of you will be drawn after our actions. If we act in a certain way, our mindset and our thoughts and our emotions will be pulled in that exact direction. So it all is going to depend what you do. If you do actions that are negative, that's going to pull your thoughts and emotions in a negative way. If you choose actions that are positive, that's going to pull you in a positive way. So therefore, he says, the idea that we should, by getting involved in charity, by getting involved in charitable acts, that's going to pull us that's going to pull us and create within us a sense of being charitable people. Being charitable people. The Talmud, in source number 5, the Talmud makes a statement about another activity. We're going to take a pause from charity just for a moment, and talks about the following situation. Ohiv lefrok, v'sone litzon. You're walking down the road. There are no cars. Right? It's olden days. There's animals. Or maybe it's a car. And you have your friend, your ohiv, the one that you love, so his animal needs unburdening. The packages have to come out of the car. Then you see your enemy, in his sense it's your enemy's animal, and that needs to be loaded, right? So the enemy's going on a trip and you need to load the car. What should you do? Who do you help? There's, let's say, only time to help one. Who should you help? I would think, you know, first blush, I know for sure if you ask my students, they would say, help your friend.
Yeah.
Help your friend. So the Talmud tells us exactly differently. Mitzvah besone, go with your enemy. Why? Kedei lechofes yitzro. You're going to pull your inclination and your spirit. You're going to train yourself to think better about people. You're going to train yourself to be more helpful if you help the one that is quote unquote your enemy as opposed to your friend. And this idea that charity is about what it does to you, this was an age-old debate that the next source talks about, a phenomenal conversation. Because normally when we think of the Talmud, and we close our eyes, we shouldn't close our eyes after 9 o'clock at night at a lecture, but if you think about the Talmud, you're thinking about rabbis and a house of study. But every once in a while, the Talmud clues you in on phenomenal conversations. And the Talmud in Bava Basra on Daf Yud Amud Aleph clues us into a conversation that took place during the time of the Roman persecution between Turnus Rufus, who was a Roman officer general, and Rabbi Akiva, the famous Rabbi Akiva, I imagine he's probably been mentioned at many a Jeff lecture. Rabbi Akiva, who only started his study of Torah when he was 40 years old, and he didn't even know the Aleph Beis. So there's a conversation between the Roman general and Rabbi Akiva. And that conversation went as follows. In source number 6, on page 2. Vizu she'ela sha'al turnus rufus harashas Rabbi Akiva. This is the following question that the general asked the rabbi, Rabbi Akiva. Im elokechem ohev aniyim hu. You talk about how God loves the poor, how God takes care of those who are needy. Mipnei ma eno mefarnasam. Why don't they win the lottery? Why doesn't God take care of them? Why not? Why should there be any poor people? If God loves everyone, right? It sounds like a decent question. And this is what Rabbi Akiva was charged by this Roman officer. Amar lei, Rabbi Akiva answered back to him. You know why poor people need to be poor? Kidei shenitzal anu behen midina shel gehenom. So that we, the ones who will give the charity, so that we'll be saved. We will receive, we the givers will receive salvation by giving those who are needy. So that's not, but the conversation doesn't end there. He charges back at him. Amar le, this Turnus Rufus, this Roman general says back, Adaraba, just the opposite. You think you're earning yourself points in heaven by giving money to the poor? You're not. Zu shemachayvin legehenim. Every time you give money to the poor, you're earning negative points. You're earning yourself punishment by helping the poor. Why? So he says the following parable. Says the Roman general, Rabbi Akiva, listen, imagine a king. And a king, he had a servant, he had an eved that did something wrong. And he went ahead, and to punish that eved, he threw the slave that the king had into jail. He's sitting there being punished in jail. And someone else from the king's court goes behind the back of the king and starts feeding the prisoner food and making sure the prisoner has sustenance. When the king finds out, isn't he going to be furious? And Turnus Rufus, who was seemingly an educated Roman general, started quoting scripture. And he said, you Jewish people, you're called slaves to God. You're called avadim. You're called slaves. So what does that mean? God took an individual and said he needs or she needs to be poor. And you're going, that like being thrown into the dungeon. and you're going around God's back, you're thinking differently than God, and you're providing this individual with sustenance? How dare you? You're ruining God's plan. So Rabbi Akiva turned to him and said, No. You don't understand. I'll answer you with a parable. Same king, because all Jewish parables has a king. Same king, but this time the king's son did something wrong. And the king's son was put into prison, starving. And someone from the king's court snuck in and gave the prisoner prince, gave him food, gave him sustenance. When the king finds out that someone was able to have proper mercy on his son, do you realize the presents and the gifts the king is going to bestow on that person? The Jewish people not only are called avadim, they're not only called the slaves of God, they're also called banim. They're also called the children of God. And when we go ahead and give charity to a fellow Jew, and you can even make the argument, and this we're going to see, if you take, well, in a moment, when we turn to source 7, you can even make the argument that giving charity to even beyond the Jewish people, but just being charitable, because all humans are created by God, all people were created in God's image, that is not going against God's plan, but it's following God's plan, and it benefits us, as Rabbi Akiva said originally. It benefits the one who is giving. In source number 7, on the top of page 3, Maimonides, the Rambam, he writes, Tzavu chachamim, our sages have commanded us, levaker chol lehem, to visit their sick. Here he's talking about non-Jews who are sick. Lekvor meisehem, to be involved, if necessary, to bury the dead of the non-Jews. In meisei Yisrael, to take care of them, just like you take care of the dead bodies of Yisrael, of the Jews. Ulefarnasam anehem, bechlal anei Yisrael, to give charity to the poor of the non-Jewish community as well. It's something that we look at as it's charitable. Now, we might have to say that a person needs to perhaps take care. We're going to talk about the fact, and we'll get there eventually, that your number one concern is to your family, maybe then your community. So you'll have to be in proper proportion. So there's this idea that tzedakah is there to train us. So number one, we have tzedakah being that I'm helping someone, that's a goal. Number two is it's not only that it's helping the person who I'm giving, but it's helping me, the individual who is giving the money, I'm becoming a better person whenever I give charity. A third possible goal in giving charity has to do with the concept that's known as ma'aser. Ma'aser comes from the word eser or aser, which is a tenth. Because when you read the psukim that we read, when you read the verses that we read, the mitzvah of charity, the mitzvah of giving tzedakah in a vacuum, is when a poor person is in front of you asking for money. You then have a mitzvah to give that person. When you're aware of a specific need, you can fill that need. There's another top concept within charity called ma'aser, that a person sits either at the end of the year, at the beginning of the year, at quarterly sections of the year, and realizes how much money they earn. And there's this Jewish idea, which we'll talk about, of giving one-tenth of that which you earn to charity. One-tenth of that which you earn to charity. And so one of the goals in giving charity might be to accomplish this concept that's called ma'aser. Where does this concept come from? So there are a number of options. If you take a look at source number 8, another pasuk in Sefer Devarim, in Parshas Re'eh, the pasuk tells us, "Aser ta'aser eskol tvuas zarecha." You shall surely tithe all of the produce of your planting. What's that verse talking about? In ancient Israel, in the time of the Mishnah, there was an agricultural cycle. 6 years you work the land. On the seventh, the land lays fallow and you rest. You rest your soul. You rest the land. Those 6 years that you're working the land, there's a cycle of tithe. There's a cycle of things that you need to give to certain individuals. Every single year, you need to give 2% to the priests, to the Kohanim. Every single year, you need to give 10% to the Levites. But then there was another, I don't know if they had, tax brackets and all these things they need to fill out, but they, They had another thing you needed to check off. In the first, second, fourth, and fifth of the six-year cycle, you had to take 10% of your produce, bring it to Jerusalem, and have a good time. Doesn't sound so bad. It can get a little bit complicated if you live far north and you did very well that year and you need to bring 10% of your grapes to Jerusalem. It could be a little bit of a problem, so the rabbis figured out a way for you to convert it to cash, bring the cash to Jerusalem, and have a party and invite your friends. In years 3 and year 6, there was a tithe called the tithe of the poor, what's called Ma'aser Ani. That's what this pasuk is talking about. 10% you would give in year 3 and year 6, you'd give that 10%, you wouldn't go to Jerusalem with those funds, you'd give those 10% to the poor. That may very well be the source for us living now without a temple, not in the land of Israel, to look at our produce, what are our produce, the money that we earn, even if we're not farmers, and to give what we call ma'aser, to give a tenth of that which you earn. There's a debate about, is this practice a biblical precept? You can debate it, because this pasuk that we're talking about is not, it's not biblically saying all the money that you earn every single year. It was talking about a given situation. There's another source, because if you go back in the Torah, if you go back to the book of Bereshis, the book of Genesis, when our father Yaakov, was kind of running away from home, he was on the run from his brother, he turned to God and he said, God, if you take care of me, I'll give 10%. I'll give 10%. So again, it's a beautiful idea, but that's not necessarily a biblical commandment to go ahead and give this maaser, to give this tenth. And so what happens is we end up with a like many topics in Judaism, we end up with a little bit of a debate, what we call a machlokas, an argument, where some are of the opinion that it is a biblical mitzvah, some are of the opinion that it's a rabbinic mitzvah, and perhaps the most accepted opinion, and the one that kind of makes it a little easier to work around this issue, take a look at source number 11, a comment of the Pisrei Tshuva, one of the commentators on the Shulchan Aruch. He says, V'teima al ha-ga'onim ha-niskarim she'ne'ala mehem tshuvas maharam mi-Rutenberg. I don't understand. I'm surprised that people aren't aware of one of the responsa of one of the sages known as the Maharam mi-Rutenberg. Mavur she'sham kidas habach she'eno min ha-Torah. This idea of giving a tenth, it's not a biblical commandment. V'lo mid-Rabbanan, and it's not even a rabbinic commandment. V'eino elo min ha-ga ba'alma. It's a custom. Now, it's a good custom. It's a respected custom. It's a custom we should try to keep. But we have to put it in perspective that it's a custom to give this 10%. So when we're giving our charity at any point during the year, we're trying to accomplish one of these three goals. Number one, we're trying to fill someone's need. Number two, we're trying to do something perhaps for ourselves. And number three, we might be following this age-old Jewish concept and practice of giving 10% of what we have away to charity. So here's a question, now that we're getting to our priorities. You have a choice to make. Let's deal with $1,000. Let's just make it simple. You are going to give $1,000 to charity. Here's the first choice you have. Should you give $1,000 to one poor person? Or should you give $1 to 1,000 people? $100 to 10 people? What do you do? What's best? So it might depend. If it's about the recipients, so then you're going to have to assess what's best for the recipients. If it's about you, the giver, so what happens? I'm going to say this year I'm going to give $1,000. So it's the 2 days after Rosh Hashanah. I'm ready to be a good Jew. I give my $1,000. I'm done for the year till next Rosh Hashanah. That's not necessarily going to pull me. But if you work out the math, you're going to give 1,000 to 1,000 different people, so you're going to have to give at least $3 a day. Let's approximate it. Right? So every day I'm giving charity. Every day. So take a look at the Talmud in source number 12. The Talmud is not here talking necessarily about charity. It's talking about the tithe that you would give to the priest, to the Kohen. It's on the bottom of page 3, where the Talmud tells us, Kol hanosein matnosav L'koin echad mevi ra'av la'olam. Anyone who takes their tithes that they're trying to give to the Kohen, and they give all of the priestly tithes to one priest, to one Kohen, is going to bring famine to the world. Sounds pretty harsh, right? Sounds pretty harsh. Now, you might say the thinking is that if this guy gets all the food, he's going to be the popular guy. This Kohen's going to have what to eat. Nebuch, the guy down the block, is going to have nothing. So the Talmud is definitely saying to put all your eggs in one basket, that doesn't sound to be the right approach. The Rambam, Maimonides, in his commentary to Pirkei Avot, to the ethics of our fathers that many of us in our various communities, specifically between the weeks of between Pesach and Shavuot, and now even some go into summer, specifically in these long Shabbos afternoons, we see synagogues throughout the world learn Pirkei Avot. So the Rambam makes the following statement. In source 13, the top of page 4. Hama'alot lo yusgu lefi shiur godel hama'aseh, elefi rov mispar hama'aseh. The quality in someone's actions is not achieved through doing something great, but through doing a great number of things, a great number of deeds. Mashal zeh, he says, as an example, Sha'adam im yitein lemisha roi elef dinar, someone who gives 1,000 dinars, for us, forget a dinar, $1,000 to one suitable recipient, once, lo tusag lo ma'alos hanedivos b'zeh ha'maaseh ha'echar agadol. The individual is not going to, the one who's giving is not going to attain for themselves the generosity by just doing that once. Kimosha tusag lemisha yisnadev elef pa'amim be'elef dinar. You can't compare it to someone who's going to take 1,000 and give to 1,000. V'yitein kol dinar mehem al tzad nedivos. Each and every time they're going to go ahead and give it with a generosity of spirit. So this makes it sound like you should try to go ahead and give individual smaller gifts. Now, what most probably is the best to do is to find, and this will quote a Rambam from somewhere else, is to find the happy medium. You might have to realize if it's too small of a gift that you're giving to someone, it might not be effective. Then again, if everyone's involved in doing this, and there's an idea within the world of economics or finance of giving micro loans, that small loans, small increments can actually help get a person perhaps on their feet. So you're going to try to perhaps find a happy medium. Another concept that comes out within the realm of charity is, it sounds like a very tall order. If you flip your sheet back to page number 1, to keep you busy, right? You flip back to page number 1 in verse Chet, or 8. Source number 2, which are the psukim that talk about this concept of charity. Source pasuk chet or verse 8. It says ki fasoach tiftach es yad chelo. You're going to open up your hand. V'havi tavitan. You'll even lend de machsoro asher yachsar lo. What you're going to do is you're going to give the person what they're lacking. An individual is poor. Everyone, right? We spoke about the hand. Everyone has different needs. The Talmud in Maseches Ksubos says, you technically, to fulfill this verse, filling a person's need, what was their lifestyle like before they fell into hard times? If he was driving or she was driving a
Jaguar,
Mercedes, Tesla, right? And now they fell into hard times, they had to sell off all their stuff, and they're still in hard times? If you're going to follow the pasuk literally, to fulfill their need, you're going to have to bring them up to whatever they were lacking. And the Talmud uses the example, if they were used to having extra servants that kind of ran in front of them and took care of their needs, you have to pay for that too. Now that's an ideal. The Ramah, Rav Moshe Isserles, in his comments on the Shulchan Aruch, he says that in practice, that's a little bit of too much of a tall order. What maybe it means is that when we're trying to fill the poor person's need is a recognition that we ourselves most probably can't handle it, right? that individual might be lacking so much based on what they used to have that I don't have the ability to help out. So when the Torah says I need to try to fill their need, it means spread the word. It means get my friends involved. It means make sure people are aware. Remember this in this family. This is what they used to have. This is what they've kind of fallen. They've fallen into hard times. There is a little bit of a debate whether or not when I was not asked directly by the poor individual to give charity, but I know they exist in my community, do I have the same responsibility to give to them? Or is it only when they come, to ask me? This ideal of giving a person exactly what they need, so that might only apply if you're the only one available to help them. But if you're not the only one available to help them, you're part of a community, and you're part of what we're trying to achieve here tonight, where Klal Yisrael, the Jewish people, create a community of givers so that it doesn't all fall on your shoulder. The next question that we could raise is, you have that same $1,000. And here, as an assistant rabbi, I know nothing of the following concept: the rabbi's discretionary fund. Every synagogue, or every large synagogue, has a rabbi's discretionary fund, which assistant rabbis know nothing about. And the question is, what's better? Should I give the charity myself, or should I give the charity to the rabbi? And the rabbi will go ahead and give and distribute. So we go back to our goals, right? If the goal, let's start with the third goal. If the goal of giving charity is to give that 10%, so everything you give to the rabbi's discretionary fund, that he is going to go ahead and then give to others, that'll count. You'll fill up your quota of your 10%. If it's about fulfilling the need of the poor individual, well, the poor person's going to get it through the rabbi. But on the perspective that it's supposed to do something for me, so the experience of me giving the poor individual, that might be more of a giving experience than me writing a check in the shul office. Because in both cases I'm giving, but it's a different kind of giving. The Rambam tells us, if you take a look at source 16, on page number 4, the Rambam says something so beautiful. You have to remember, the Rambam, he was born in Spain, he ends up making his home in Egypt, and he received correspondence from all over the Jewish world in the late 1100s. The Rambam passed away in 1204. So throughout the late 1100s, he was a known entity, and people were corresponding. Listen to this beautiful statement, and I believe it's true from 1204 until today, 2017. The Rambam says in source 16, the bottom of page 4, Me'olam lo ra'inu v'lo shamanu bekahal mi'Yisrael. I have never heard of a Jewish community, she'in lahem kupa shel tzedaka, that did not have the rabbi's discretionary fund, that did not have a kupa shel tzedaka, that didn't have the organization within the community that went ahead and gave out charity. The official term kupa, so that was an age-old term. It literally means a box, but it was an age-old term for a weekly charity fund that would exist in every Jewish community, where the members of the community would have to give once a week to this charity fund, and it would then be given out to the recipients once a week. And so it's an age old institution to have something like the rabbi's discretionary fund. The modern day halachic deciders of law are strongly encourage us to be involved in communal types of charity, and it might be for the following reason. I'm not the senior rabbi. I don't necessarily know someone who's in need, and I don't have a perspective on this person's needs versus that person's needs. When you go to quote-unquote the expert, and our hope is that in all of our communities, and I know here in New Rochelle the reputation of charity is stellar, is that the rabbi's discretionary fund, the rabbi has the wherewithal to, first of all, through his Torah knowledge, but also that there's a central place where everyone's going, that he could perceive people's needs. He's going to know about the individual in the community that perhaps lost a job that we don't know about because the person's embarrassed to let us know about it, but they'll let the rabbi know. He'll know about the person who's receiving a cancer treatment that can't pay their mortgage, but we won't know because the person didn't want anyone to know. So what most likely is that when you're lucky enough to be in a community that offers this, it might be the best way, and even though you might not get the same level of the what it does for your soul, you're not going to come in contact with the poor individual. So, but the fact is, you know for sure your money's going to a good place, and that perhaps is more important. If you're privileged, we happen to hear in New Rochelle on Purim, so we take part in a program where we kind of get the best of both, where our rabbi, Rabbi Fink, works very hard with some organizations to locate 150 families in Brooklyn who are in need, and then we, the community members, get involved with taking deliveries with packages and envelopes of Matanot Levyonim and delivering it into their homes and giving it to them. And it's for anyone who's brought their children, this was only my first year involved, it's a very powerful experience, because when you give and you realize what you're giving, you then also realize what you have, it affects your soul in a meaningful way. If you have a list of individuals, how do you decide who comes first? So when you go through the sources, first is relatives. If you have family members that are in need of charity, you have to take care of them first. The Sefer HaChassidim says that anyone who doesn't take care of a relative, they themselves are going to have to deal with financial issues themselves. You can't let a relative down. The pasuk, the verse that we were talking about, so the verse, you actually use the phrase echad me'achecha, one of your brothers. Now there it was talking about the expansive, it was talking about, you know, as my students like to say, your brother from another mother. The idea meaning brothers, meaning the Jewish people were one big happy family, but it does say the word brother. And so you have to take care of a family. Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, who was a posek in Israel in the previous generation, and you know that means he passed away in the 90s. That's the previous generation. So he said that the number one is really yourself. If you're lacking, then you need to make sure to first take care of yourself. Meaning you might, and in regards to the idea of giving a tenth, you don't necessarily, again, going with the approach that it's a minhag, a custom. You don't have to give that tenth if you can't afford to give that tenth. If you need to make sure, to first take care of yourself. So then your relatives come first. There's a concept of aniye ircha, that the poor people of your community take precedence over the poor people from other communities. The Shulchan Aruch makes the following statement, which is the last source that you have on your sheet. The last source in source 17, the Yoshvei Eretz Yisrael, Kodmin LeYoshvei Chutz La'aretz. Those who dwell in Israel, they take priority over those who dwell outside of Israel. So all of a sudden you think, oh, all the letters coming in the mail from Israel, that takes precedence. The Chassam Sofer in the 1800s explained this halacha and said, it's perhaps based on the spirituality of where they're living, maybe we should give precedence to those who live in Jerusalem over those who live in the other cities in Israel, because Jerusalem, we know, is the holiest city. The Rabbi Schechter, my Rebbe from Yeshiva University, so he has a little bit of an expansive view on what aniye ircha, those poor people in your community, why do they take precedence before people outside your community? So he explains that it's not necessarily everyone in your community, it's the organizations in your community that impact you. The ones that influence you and make a roshim on you, that you need to take care of those organizations. The organizations that move you, you should, that's aniye ircha. So, I'm not getting paid for this, If Jep moves you, I'm being serious. Then that has a status of Aniyei Ircha more than other organizations. There might be a yeshiva in your community. Maybe your children didn't go there, but the fact that maybe they held a lecture series that you once went to. Maybe they helped out when a relative of yours was sick. They sent people to visit them in the hospital. Those types of, when there's a connection, so that's what Aniyei Ircha is. This was a unique comment this comment was made in the 1500s by a commentator known as the, maybe it was a little after the six, maybe it was 1600s, the Panim Yafos, the Hafla, where he said this whole idea of looking at Aniyei Ircha, at those who are local versus others, that's when their needs are equal. But someone who's not local and has greater need, take care of the need. The need will supersede. So you find out that, you know, someone who lives outside Westchester, someone that you know is in dire need, that could go ahead and that could take precedence over those who are around you. In Baltimore, the city of Baltimore today, there's a wonderful kashrus organization known as the Star K. And it's run by Rabbi Heineman. And Baltimore, probably more so than New York, it has more of a sense of community. You know, here in New York, you know,
fragmented.
Yeah, we're a little fragmented. You have, you know, not necessarily New Rochelle, but not necessarily in Scarsdale, because it's kind of like one. But like in most places in New York, you know, there's the shul you daven at, the shul you won't daven at, the shul you would never daven at, even if you needed a minion. And, you know, unfortunately. So, but in Baltimore, there's a little more sense of community.
Smaller.
Yeah, it's out of town. Who knows? Out of town. It's a huge city. But
not as big as New York.
So he came up with rules. Rules to work with for charity, which I'm sharing them with you, not to tell you you have to do this, but it's a thought. Where he said you should take whatever charity you're going to give for the year, 50% should go to local, and 50% should go outside of local. Then, within the 50%, that you should divide it into thirds. One should be the and if you have to take care of any of what he would refer to as like the moral causes, maybe you have family members, maybe those things that you feel close to, a third to organizations that fall into a specific category, and then pick another, meaning divide your 50% into thirds. I heard quoted in the name of my Rabbi, Rabbi Schechter, that he thought you should divide differently. He thought you should divide 75-25. That 75% should be to the local things, and then 25% should be to other things. I think the most important thing to learn from both of these examples is the more organized you are about your tzedakah, the better it's going to be. That if you think about it, whether you're doing it at the beginning of the year, whether you're doing it to the end of the year, but you think about it and you do it in a way that's calculated, so it will have a greater effect on what you're doing your charity with. The greatest story that I ever heard about charity is a story that I'm going to try to do justice to. If you've heard it before, I probably won't do justice to it. If you haven't heard it, I'll do a little bit of justice to it. In Krakow, Poland, many, many years ago, hundreds of years ago, there was a man in the city who was extremely wealthy. And his name was Yasala. But Yasala would not give any charity. He was known as a miser, Yasala the miser, Yasala the kamtsan, the one who would never ever give charity. And it came time towards the end of his life, where the chever kedisha, those who take care of the dead, they came to him and said, Yasala, you're going to die, and no one's going to want to have anything to do with you. Give charity now. Give 1,000 rubles of charity now, and we promise we'll take care of you when you pass away. And he says, no. He yells back at them, I'm only willing to give you 50. I wouldn't never give that much money away. They said, Yossel, you're about to die. He won't give it. Lo and behold, he dies, and the Chevra Kedisha says we want nothing to do with him. They left his body. 1 day, 2 days, 3 days. Finally, one of his neighbors just decides, something has to be done. In the middle of the night, he takes his body by himself. He goes outside the official cemetery, and he buries him in Krakow. That Friday morning, the rabbi in the town gets a knock at his door from one of the individuals in the community asking for charity, asking for funds to make Shabbos, to get food. The rabbi says, of course, I'll try to give you, but why are you only coming now? And he said that, well, for the last 10 years, every Thursday night, I found an envelope at my door with money inside, and I was able to use it, and it didn't come last night. So the rabbi gave. And a couple of minutes later, the same thing happened again, where someone knocked on the door, said, I need. And he said, well, the rabbi said, I'll give you, but why is this the first time you're coming? And he said, well, every Thursday night, there was an envelope at my door. And all of a sudden, the rabbi started to realize something. And the rabbi asked them, do you have any clue who gave you the money? They said, we're not sure, but we always had an inkling that it was Yasala. So the rabbi said, but why? How? So they said that every poor person in the town, they always had a dream that they could, while they were awake, that they could actually go to Yasala's house and they would be the one to be successful. So everyone once in their life worked up the guts to knock on Yasala's door. And when we did that, each one said the same exact story. Yasala would take us in with a smile, sit us down, give us a drink, and start asking us about what we need. And he would take notes. And all of a sudden, at the end of the conversation, Yasala's face would totally change. He'd become red with anger. He'd pick us up by our collars and throw us out the door. And the following Thursday, we would find an envelope with the exact amount we had said that we needed. So the rabbi was very nervous. The rabbi was very nervous because this is how they treated the greatest sage or the greatest tzaddik. And so the rabbi said the following Sunday morning, they were going to all go, they were going to fast, and they were going to go to that burial spot outside of the cemetery, and they were going to pray at the kever, at the grave. And it was after a whole day of prayer, the rabbi was so exhausted that he fell asleep right there. And while he was sleeping, he had a dream. And Yasala, the miser, came to him in a dream. And the rabbi started begging him for forgiveness, and Yasala started telling him, there's no need to beg for forgiveness. That's exactly what I wanted to do. It's exactly how I wanted it to be. And the only thing that I'm lacking in the place where I am right now, the only thing I wish for is another Thursday night that I could give out the envelopes that were needed. And the way the tradition has it is that one of the later Rabbanim in Krakow, the Tosos Yom Tov, he asked to be buried right next to the kever of this Yasala of the miser, and on his kever it's written Yasala the holy miser. It's a famous story that Rabbi Shlomo Karbach told in his lifetime, and if you ever heard it from him, I envy you. And if you go on YouTube, you can find a free recording. It takes him about 20 minutes to say the story, so I gave you a discount. But the story, I think, highlights how special and unique the mitzvah of charity has been to the Jewish people. And, you know, when you walk, you should never be in the hospital. There's only one good floor in the hospital. That's the floor where babies are being born. Mm-hmm. So you should walk on that floor. And in the city of New York, take a look at the names on the walls. Take a look at the Jewish-sounding names on the walls. We've taught, I believe, humbly, that we've taught the world about charity. And in our lifetimes, we need to figure out ways to continue to teach ourselves, to continue to teach our children about charity. And in that merit, in the merit of being charitable, we hope that the same way we're trying to emulate God and be a giver, that God will be the ultimate giver. He'll give us back a peaceful time in our homeland all together with the Mashiach and Beis HaMikdash Meher B'Yameinu.
Sure. Rabbi Yaxerad is available now for anybody who would like to ask a question on this very important subject, which is a multifaceted one, so this is a great opportunity.
So on the question of anonymity, I've heard that it's better to give anonymously, and is that true, and what do you gain and what do you lose? And
so the Rambam is famous for having different kind of levels of charity, and in his opinion, he describes anonymity as the greatest. As one of the greatest. The balance is always going to be what we're trying to accomplish in terms of what you can, the personal touch for the one who's giving won't necessarily be there. So it's always going to be a balance, and maybe it's something that you try to accomplish different things in different ways. You know, however much charity you're going to give, maybe figure out ways to accomplish different degrees of that. So if you can, some of it give anonymously, and so maybe some of it try not to give anonymously. You know, meaning try to be balanced.
But if I'm giving and I want recognition for the giving, which many people do, because I feel good that I.
Well, there's also the approach that if I see your name on the wall, I'm going to want to also be on the wall. And at the end of the day, if I want to be in the wall, and he wants to be on the wall, and he wants to be on the wall, so at the end of the day, the wall's going to have a lot of names, and the people who need the money are going to get it. Would it be best if it's like on the wall in small letters as opposed to big, bold letters? Maybe. Maybe.
Okay, and the follow-up question is giving to organizations versus giving to individuals. Like, and or organizations that don't, is there a priority, say, feeding food and an education for children?
So you're going to hear different in the halachic literature. You're going to see different opinions. There's one opinion brought down in Shulchan Aruch that the greatest charity to do is hachnasas kala, is helping a bride get married, but then you're going to hear an opinion that's different. But even within that, you have to be level and balanced. You don't have to give a bride a 21-piece band. There has to be a level of seichel and of balance. In terms of organizations, what some try to be careful with, and some organizations pride themselves on, is, and this is now, if you take a step back away from Jewish charities, this is in American charities, is how much of the dollar goes to charity versus how much gets lost in certain costs. So you have certain charities pride themselves that, you know, certain charities pride themselves that 100% of the funds go to charity, and they have extra people donate. Even the envelopes are donated by someone else. So that when you give a dollar is going to the poor individual. I would think, again, for those of us in the room who have not yet won the lottery, and we have a limited amount of funds, you should try to get the most you can out of your funds. So picking an organization that's responsible with the money versus maybe, you know, they have a lot of overhead. If you know an individual, or let's say you have that rabbi's discretionary fund, and the rabbi knows the individual, you know, that might be an approach. But again, trying to be balanced, I think is the way to go. Yes, Rebison.
Regarding the question regarding anonymity, which is a very important point, I think that if there's an individual that we may know, or it's a yachid, when an individual, that somehow perhaps that can be given anonymously, and then there's all kinds of ways that can be done, including the discretionary fund, or another way, there's always, you know, different venues.
Envelope under the door.
Whereas, mm-hmm. If somebody does want recognition for the organization's recognition, well, that's a different story.
Right.
The main thing, not to embarrass an individual or a family, that, you know, perhaps would be,
for sure.
Might take precedence.
For sure. And in that regard, there's also, we didn't get to it, like I said, there's a lot to talk about, but if you have the ability to, instead of the age-old example, instead of giving the person a fish, teaching the person how to fish, that's also a certain, that's also an ideal.
Job.
Right, job training and things of that nature.
On Shabbos, the shul asks for money for this or that organization. That's clearly a charitable gift, right?
So that would not necessarily fall under what we call tzedakah. That would fall under this idea of maser, giving a tenth to good-natured organizations. That'll include Torah centers. It'll include synagogues. It'll include building a mikvah. It'll include various things. Tzedakah is going to be a poor individual who's at your door, or a poor individual who someone knows in the community. That's going to be the official. Those are the verses in Devarim that we saw at the beginning. So the appeals that are made in shul for, you know, this year in our synagogue, we made one appeal for the National Chevra Kedisha. Again, wonderful charitable organization, and that would fall. Let's say you apportion 10%. You can get any appeal that takes place in shul can come from your 10%.
But then the tzedakah would be on top of that.
You can use your 10% for tzedakah, but the concepts are separate. And any time throughout the year you come to a specific mitzvah, it's judged. I mean, on Purim we have a specific obligation to give, you know, two gifts to two, you know, one gift to two poor people, one gift to two poor people, or, you know, that'll be something separate. Yeah.
In keeping with your idea that through the act of giving we are feeling elevated ourselves and in touch, one of my children is in a group home and also goes to a Dehab program run by Beis Ezra. And one of the high points of his week is that the people at the Dehab prepare meals for homeless people.
So they become givers.
They become givers.
And that lifts, exactly.
Very much so.
So it doesn't matter who a person is.
Right.
It doesn't matter even in a situation where normally they're receiving.
Right.
But when you give them the opportunity to be a giver,
yes,
that goes a big distance.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing. And also thank you for dedicating the lecture.
Thank you.
Yes.
Most of us keep getting envelopes from many, many charities. And you try to give to as many as you possibly can. But every now and then you'll hear a newspaper report about some fake charity that's collected money. Now, when these charities come, we don't know how to judge whether this one, especially in Israel, whether it's real or not. And sometimes it's a real charity, but its name in Israel is not the name on the envelope that we're giving to, because they have an American arm that gets the money. But
I think you're entitled to do research.
But that's my question. How is there a list somewhere? Like, I can tell if something's kosher, CRC and
right.
A lot of other organizations have great lists of what's kosher.
Again, the rabbi in your community will know many of the organizations. And if, for example, you know, I don't know, some Hatzalah in a random town in Israel sent you an envelope, so, ooh, Hatzalah, saving, you know, ambulance, that sounds like a good cause, but I never heard of that one. So the rabbi might be able to point you in the direction of, well, you know, there's the United Hatzalah in Jerusalem, you know, run by Eli Beer, which is a reputable organization. So you want to give Hatzalah? Give that one. You know, so that he might... Again, and you have to do due diligence. The same way you do due diligence if people send you in the mail to invest in their fund, so you wouldn't just give your money to anybody. You do research. You have to do research.
What about giving to the American Cancer Society or a non-Jewish organization that's a good organization versus a Jewish organization going to Jewish people? I get things in the mail all the time.
Right, so we saw the comment of the Rambam that we're supposed to give. It should be probably what I imagine, and again, I'm not a decider, I'm not a posek, I'm not a decider of law. It should be in perspective that maybe the majority of what we give should be to Jewish causes, but there could be a sizable a reasonable percentage that we give. Listen, supporting let's say your example, the American can't, you know, Jews get cancer also, so unfortunately. So that you, in some ways you might even make the argument that you're not necessarily, you might be helping Jews. So that's something to think about. I think we'll pause with questions because we're gonna. And but if you have you know privately, or my email is caxelrod@yanr.org. So
I'd like to thank Rabbi Axelrod and everyone for that. Very uplifting, very enlightening. Hopefully we'll all be able to get this mitzvah just right. I would like to acknowledge the presence of one individual.